This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you news of the world. Tonight, Chicago, the world's greatest school of livestock education, in session. London, the Big Four strike snag number 101. Paris, the communists fight back. Jerusalem, another unholy day in the Holy Land. Washington, the president shoots again at 100 billion bushels of grain. Now a brief message from Tom Moore.
Notice how good food tastes these December evenings. But after a particularly big meal, do you sometimes feel overstuffed and uncomfortable? Well, that discomfort may last even until bedtime. And it's no wonder. Chances are you haven't been very active all evening. You've done nothing more strenuous than sit in an easy chair and read your paper. So all that food hasn't become fully digested. But don't let the effects of that big meal keep you awake after you've gone to bed. Instead, drink a glass of sparkling, refreshing Alka-Seltzer. Yes, dissolve one or two Alka-Seltzer tablets in a glass of water and then drink it. See how quickly and efficiently Alka-Seltzer can ease that jittery, overstuffed feeling in the stomach. How it acts to reduce excess gastric acidity. You like Alka-Seltzer's taste. Notice what a clean, fresh taste it leaves in the mouth. But more important, what a comfortable feeling in the stomach. So make sure your Alka-Seltzer supply. Keep an extra 30 or 60 cent size package on hand. Then when your tablets get down to four, with an extra package, you'll have some more. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
News of the World broadcasts from the great city of Chicago tonight, the home of an institution peculiarly American and peculiarly important to every American home. It's the International Livestock Exposition, now in its 48th year of spectacular success. The exposition for 1947 is in mid-stride of a week-long stand. The last two world wars have proved to medical science that the human family succumbs to tuberculosis and communicable diseases in exact ratio to their food supply or the lack of it. The absence of fats and oils and proteins from the German diet today, for example, has caused tuberculosis deaths to increase 100%. Here in Chicago at the International Exposition, American livestock breeders are encouraged to compete for grand prizes on a scale unknown anywhere else in the world. This competition in 48 years has meant that in America today we grow two steers where only one grew in 1900. It takes only a year and a half to produce a steer today compared to 3 to 4 years a half century ago. Today they auctioned off the grand champion shorthorn of the annual show, grown by Claude Milwee of Fort Cobb, Oklahoma. Leroy Johnson of Belton, Missouri performed the auction, and here recorded during the sale are the opening bids per pound.
We are ready to go, and the auction is on, and what are we to give for it? All right, I've got $2 a pound bid. I might say, just excuse me a minute, but I might say that Colonel Ray Sims is down there working with you people and will be selling a part of the cattle in this sale today. I've got $2 a pound bid. Just $3. I get $3 down, $4 got it. What $3, you're going to buy $4, Tony, you're going to buy $4, Tony, you're going to buy $4, you're going to want it. What $3, you're going to buy $4, Tony, you're going to buy $4, you're going to want it. I got $3, you're going to buy $4, Tony, you're going to buy $4, you're going to want it. What $3, you're going to buy $4, Tony, you're going to buy $3 down, $4, Tony, you're going to buy $4, you're going to want it. What $3, you're going to buy $4, Tony.
Not tobacco, but steers. And so it went for an hour or so until the grand champion was sold for $8 a pound. A few lucky Chicagoans in a week or two from now will pay considerably more than that for the privilege of saying they ate a steak from the grand champion of 1947. And the expenditure will not be as foolish as it sounds, because they'll be encouraging the production of better food for all of us. Internationally today, the down-to-earth arguments revolving around aid to Europe popped out in debate in the House of Representatives in Washington. Representative Cox of Georgia presented the cold logics that's driving the Truman administration to propose billions of American dollars for European recovery. Russia, he said, is waging everything but a shooting war against us. Therefore, aid cannot be justified solely on humanitarian grounds. It's essential as a security measure. Past handling of American-Russian relations, he said, has been highly defective. The country now finds it must rescue itself from the prison we ourselves have built. The most awful sin ever committed, he went on, was our appeasement of Russia. The United States took Russia from the status of a second-rate power, he went on, and built her into a monster that now has the entire world trembling in its boots, including ourselves. But, concluded the Georgia representative, we must now retrace our steps and aid Europe. Aid the countries designated in the president's program, Italy, France, and Austria, to the extent of $590 billion as proposed in the House bill. Representative Leo Allen, the Illinois Republican, stated the opposition case. He called for rejection of the bill, the first aid bill, on the ground that the $590 million for France, Italy, and Austria might not stop communism in Europe. And if the Russians took over those countries, and China included, Russia would benefit from aid to Europe, not the United States of America. The debate progressed smoothly, rapidly today, and Majority Leader Charles Halleck of Indiana suggested tonight that the measure might pass late Monday, and it will join the Senate's measure of $597 million for a conference report and final agreement. Aid for Europe should reach the president's desk, certainly not later than next Wednesday or Thursday. There's no question internationally today but what Russian policy at this moment is actually promoting aid to Europe from the United States. The fact is shown by the course of events in the London Foreign Ministers' Conference today. For that story, here's Leon Pearson in London.
When Mr. Marshall sits down to lunch with Mr. Molotov tomorrow at the Soviet embassy, it will take more than a bottle of vodka to warm up the atmosphere. This day has brought more strain in U.S.-Soviet relations than any day since the Conference of Foreign Ministers began. During the fruitless discussions on Austria, Marshall stood up today at the table and said to Molotov, "What do you want out of Austria? Name your price." And at another point, he charged the Soviets with deliberately obstructing American aid to Europe. Add to this the fact that Marshall's advisor, John Foster Dulles, has gone off to France to consult with General de Gaulle about control of Western Germany without the Russians. This is the story which has all the delegations in a state of high fever. Mr. Beadow's fever is higher than anybody's because the Dulles trip is a direct slap at him. It means the Americans are discussing foreign policy not with him, the foreign minister, but with a man who is not even a member of the French government, and who incidentally is very heartily disliked by Mr. Beadow. Secretary Marshall has disavowed all knowledge of Mr. Dulles' plans and says they are personal, but the French do not believe him. What, they say, is Mr. Dulles visiting de Gaulle to ask for his autograph? The inside story, as I get it tonight, is this. First, the subject of their discussions is the merger of the French zone with the Anglo-American zones of Germany, and international control of the Ruhr without the Russians and without detachment of the Ruhr from Germany. Second, de Gaulle is being consulted because he is regarded as the man on horseback, the man who will come back to power in France, the only man who can make a deal on Germany without being accused by Frenchmen of selling the country short. This is Leon Pearson in London, and now John Donovan in Jerusalem.
This is John McVane in New York. The Security Council will meet on Tuesday to give its official backing to the UN commission that's going to administer Palestine when Britain announces it's given up the mandate. Today, the UN Trusteeship Council continued to work out just how Jerusalem will become an international city governed by the United Nations. At Lake Success also, Jewish agency officials reported trying to find out whether the United States will help suppress anti-Jewish attacks by Arabs of Palestine and the Middle East. And today, in the Holy Land, strong forces of British Tommies and police managed to restore something like order to the major cities. There were no large-scale street battles, but the Associated Press estimates that 20 Jews and 15 Arabs have been killed in 3 days of fighting. Apparently unorganized crowds of Arabs attacked bus convoys on the road between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. Minor skirmishes were reported at several points. All over the Arab world, responsible officials seem to be trying to get the mobs under control. Palestine Arab demonstrations scheduled for tomorrow were canceled, and the Egyptian government banned demonstrations after police attacked a rioting mob of 15,000 in Cairo. This is John McVane in New York, now to Henry Cassidy in Paris.
The communists are trying to put on a counteroffensive tonight against the French government, but they're crowded into a corner by the new anti-strike law adopted this morning in the assembly and by the arrival of new troops called to the colors. And most of the violence has been concentrated in the south. At the Riviera playground of Nice, 22 persons were wounded when a crowd attacked the local post office. They were driven off by mobile guards, but the local trade unions promptly called a general strike. In the city of Valence, also in the south, 2 persons were killed in a fight with police, during which a crowd occupied the local railroad station. But elsewhere in the country, order is gradually being restored, and the strikes are diminishing. The railroads, for example, are now running at 80% of normal. The current communist line was given by party leader Maurice Torres today in a speech to a mass meeting in the northern mining region. He said the new anti-strike law could become a terrible weapon in the hands of an apprentice dictator, apparently meaning General de Gaulle, and as usual, Torres condemned the Marshall Plan for aid to Europe as a threat to the independence of France. Secretary Marshall's Republican advisor, John Foster Dulles, arrived in Paris tonight. He said he came to get a first-hand impression of the French resistance to penetration from abroad, meaning this time from Russia. He will see Conservative Premier Robert Schuman, but whether he will meet General de Gaulle is doubtful. De Gaulle left Paris last night for his home in the country. This is Henry Cassidy in Paris and now Lee Feed in Washington.
Mr. Luckman may be gone, but the food-saving idea just gets bigger and more intensified, as we say in Washington. President Truman is calling for more, eat less. And his cabinet food advisors say that the emergency will continue at least until next harvest. They want the beer makers to extend their no-wheat and 25% less corn program. Whiskey makers to come up with new grain-saving rules for when the distilleries start up again Christmas Day. They want bakers to really cut down on leaving more bread than their grocer can sell. Farmers to feed less to critters, restaurants to help more, and everybody in general to work harder on meatless Tuesday, eggless Thursday, and save a slice a day. All to save that 100 million bushels, which makes Washington observers think that there's been some backsliding. Secretary Anderson still thinks we'll have to have price controls on meat next spring and maybe more controls. But Republican leaders meeting today to write their own anti-inflation program have decided no price controls, no wage controls, but lower taxes and continued rent control. The Labor Department's new wholesale price index tonight is the highest yet, nearly double 1937, up 42% in the last 17 months. Otherwise, Uncle Sam's list of subversive or front organizations out tonight includes the American Youth for Democracy, Civil Rights Congress, the Ku Klux Klan, and 68 others. But membership in one of them won't necessarily cost the government worker his job. President Truman says it would be simply one piece of evidence. Insiders tell me it's in the bag for the European relief bill, that it'll pass by a 3-1 vote. This is Lee Feed, and that's what happened in Washington today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. You've heard this, I'm sure.
When your tablets get down to 4, that's the time to buy some more.
And, of course, we mean more Alka-Seltzer. We might add to that, buy an extra package, too. That's the wisest thing to do. Yes, when you're troubled with occasional headache or acid indigestion, you want Alka-Seltzer. And when you want it, be sure you have it. Yes, keep extra Alka-Seltzer handy always.
When you buy vitamins, get the greatest value for your money. Listen.
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins.
Yes, penny for penny, one-a-day brand multiples give you more milligrams of vitamins than any other nationally known brand of multiple vitamins sold by your druggist. Each one-a-day brand multiple capsule contains all the vitamins for which requirements have been established in human nutrition. Dependable for strength, purity, quality, and...
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. Washington, the Federal Loyalty Review Board, snapped on the red light tonight for 78 organizations and their subsidiaries. They're classified as totalitarian, fascist, communist, or subversive by the Attorney General. And membership in them will bar any federal employee from his job, presumably. The Ku Klux Klan made the notoriety grade, along with an outfit at the other end of the political scale, the Southern Negro Youth Conference. There are many others most of us never heard of, including the United May Day Committee. New York, an assistant superintendent of schools, Isaac Bildersee, a member of the Jewish faith, today issued a ban against the singing of Christmas carols, those having religious significance in 23 Brooklyn schools. Personal jollity and merriment are fine, Mr. Bildersee said, but the religious features of the day should be eliminated. Quebec, Canada. And now they're attacking Santa Claus. The Quebec Diocesan Committee, whatever that is, condemned the old gentleman as a neo-pagan. Take a letter, Miss Smith, to the Diocesan Committee. Santa Claus is a better man than you are. Sincerely yours, News of the World. And that, until tomorrow at this same time, is News of the World. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Chicago.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.